This episode is brought to you by Day to Day.
Oh God, one more podcast?
Hello, hello, hello everyone, and welcome back to another great episode of Desi Standard Time. I am one of your hosts, Maz Khan. I am here with my boy, my other Maz, my other half, Maz Ali. How you doing, brother?
Maz Ali, doing here, man. Man, you are confident. You are confident mofo, bro. You already said we're here with another great episode. Ooh, you cocky, thinking that this is going to be a good episode.
Why put off the inevitable? We know it's going to be good. People be tuning in.
Yeah.
You know, we got to be humble. Why be humble? I don't understand. Yeah, we're no basically reason. Celebrities at this point. Local celebrities.
Yes.
So today we're going to be diving into another music episode. So we've kind of focused a lot on different forms of media in Pakistan, but I know that you'll notice, or our listeners will notice, that we've kind of harped on the different types of music in Pakistan. And there's, you know, various different types, and they all kind of bring something different to the table, but they're all very important because I think they influence a lot of different aspects of our culture. So we've covered, you know, in other episodes, we're covering Pakistani rock, we're covering Qawwali. Hmm. But today's episode, we're actually going to be talking about Pakistani pop music, which is definitely a category all its own.
I agree. There's definitely a lot of like notable superstars, and it's interesting because the beginning of Pakistani pop was because of the political climate that was occurring in Pakistan. So we've talked about this in the Pakistani rock episode. Obviously, there was a regime of Zia-ul-Haq who was looking to Islamicize Pakistan. So that was occurring. And before that, you know, when the film industry of Pakistan was really, really popping off, that's when bop music,
bop music?
Oh my God.
Oh, your daddy's music. Depending on how you say it, I guess it could also mean like bop means like something bad, right? In Hindi?
Bop?
Bop, like bop kya.
Oh. You know what? I don't know, actually.
And then I think also like the word for steam is like pop.
Bhuan.
No, dhuan is like smoke.
Smoke.
Steam is pop.
Bop.
Anyways, you said bop.
Yes.
Daddy music.
Daddy issues. Here we go. Nice. If you were
at the forefront.
God. Okay. Well, don't worry, because I have a way to tie this all back together with the bop and the bop. Oh, you're gonna see, it's gonna blow your mind. Here we go. But getting back to the topic, I'm gonna surprise you, baby. Don't trip. But if you were partaking in the film industry in the 60s in Pakistan, one of the prerequisites was that you had to be classically trained musically. You had to have an ustad and had to kind of go through those like levels, right? As a lot of musicians in subcontinent and Pakistan do. So a lot of pop music became popular as a result of that. So we had Ahmed Rushdie, right, who had the classic, which I don't know if this is this old of a song, but Coco Corina, right?
Coco,
that was the biggest
song.
Yeah, exactly. So Coco Corina, and that's what I think that was essentially like the first official like Pakistani like pop song that came to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Followed by in the 70s, you know, Alamgir, Umma Dumma Chikiliki, I think that's how it went. Anyway, I used to dance.
My dad loved Alamgir, like it was like his favorite thing. I think, and here's the thing with Pakistan, like because it's so small, or it's a smaller community anyways, and at least India, you know, people tend to know each other. So my dad had a lot of stories about how like Alamgir lived like down the street from him at some point or whatever, and they used to be like boys. I doubt that last part is true, but you know, it isn't weird. Like, you talk to people in Pakistan now who, like, especially, you know, the wealthier families who kind of, like, live in Islamabad or whatever. They're like, oh, yeah, like, you know, they're my boys. You know, he just comes over to the house all the time. I'm like, who are you talking about? And they're just like, oh, yeah, the president of Pakistan, Imran Khan, just comes in. We have daily chai together. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like all these guys, all these heroes, and all these, like, major recording artists, like Alamgir back in the day, they kind of like people like knew them and they felt closer to them. They were like an everyday man. They weren't like this crazy unobtainable person.
Yeah, no, that's true. There was my dad loved Alamgir too. Really, really liked him. And I remember just like listening to, it was kind of like Alamgir's love was sort of like forced upon me, because I remember I went to Pakistan. I saw my cousin. He did a like a school like music skit or whatever. And this was like in 92 when I went. He was about 6-5 years older than me. And he did it. He had a full beard on and he's like dancing Mansoor Bhai. He's like dancing like on stage in front of everybody. And that was like the hit like in our family. We used to watch that repeatedly, like, oh, look at him lip syncing Alamgir playing that. And my dad was always like, hey, that was funny, right? Don't you like Alamgir? Just kind of like forcing it like in my thing. I was like, oh no, he's cool. And I kind of associated with my cousins. And then I was like doing like a skit later in life. And like one of my dad's like suggestion was to do like an Alamgir song. And I was like, I don't think most people our generation know who that is, but yeah. I appreciate it.
They're always just like, oh yeah, like just do an Alamgir classic. I'm like, no one knows who the hell that is. Like, I'm not going to get up and start singing Alamgir songs. And the favorite place they want to do it is at like, what's it called? Jhanjrat Mela or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Where there's like a stage and these uncles love getting up on the stage and singing an Alamgir classic and no one knows what the hell they're talking about. Mm-hmm. It's hilarious.
It's awesome. It's funny because I feel like pop music in general, even in the States, it's like the most catchy. It's the most like bubbly and fun, right? But damn, when that translates over to our heritage, hence Pakistan, hell, India, we take it to another level, man. And not to mention like Sadhu Bhai, but like, I mean, he had a lot of like poppy songs too. I think that's part of his like the reason as to his like success even nowadays. It's like, he will do a song like Dinka Chika, Dinka Chika, Dinka Chika, Dinka Chika, right? And there's a lot of songs like that, right? A song
right.
like John, Below the God, right?
Right. I think that's a differentiator, right? Like a lot of movie songs kind of have a purpose, and pop music is just being made, you know, for the masses. It's just for like everyone. When you're watching any movie in Bollywood or Lollywood, and there's a song that comes in, the song is for an occasion within the film. So it has to fit within that certain kind of like thing. A pop singer is just making a song just about anything, you know, it doesn't have the certain place or time or whatever. And so you get these, like you're saying, these one-off kind of trendy, weird, almost music things. And that's a lot of what like Alamgir was, right? Like he was a lot of his songs were just like other language songs kind of translated into what it would be in Pakistan in Urdu or whatever. And it was very like, poppy and happy and just like, ha ha ha, let's just do this and make weird noises. And it worked. People loved it.
Yeah, he was actually influenced, and this is kind of crazy, like how Justin Bieber came to notoriety by covering like Usher songs, Chris Brown songs on his own YouTube page. And that's how he was discovered. That's kind of how Alamgir did it too. He was heavily influenced by ABBA, Boney M, and a lot of other like Western artists. Mm-hmm. And basically what he was doing, he was putting out his own Urdu like transliterated versions of those songs, and that's how you start became like popular. Albela Rahi is like based off like a Spanish or a Cuban song, and so in that time there's like a new introduction as to like a different type of music, which was like filmy pop, right. But then after that, we had other likes like, you know, Hasan Jahangir, who came out with Hawa Hawa, and then his like single hit, which was Imran Khan is a Superman, right? The great cricket star.
Yeah.
82. Also, a theme that we like to talk about is always like we're trying to find some sort of like crossover between Pakistan and India, and how a lot of times we're just like, you know, Atif, no, he came from Pakistan. A lot of people don't know that, right?
Right.
Dude, the original was Nazia Hassan. Right. She was Pakistani, based out of the UK. She's saying Qurbani's aap jaisa koi meri zindagi mein aaye. Yeah. Oh, baap ban jaye.
Oh. Wow. Didn't see that one coming at all. Amazing. Oh,
I told you, Rocky. I told you.
Amazing. But yeah, Nazia Hassan became this like big thing in Pakistan. Huge. And she was probably one of the big factors in Zia Al Haq kind of saying, all right, we got to shut everything down, because, you know, she did a lot of stuff with her brother, and then there was music videos of them like dancing and stuff like that. And of course, under a conservative Pakistani regime, that just can't happen. So no. They were
their brother. Excuse you.
Apparently, that's like scary. Like, oh, she's probably gonna marry him if she dances on the stage with her brother. God. There's only one possible solution, one possible end to the story. and it ends in deformed children from Alabama. I mean, like, it's so weird.
Yeah. But, good Lord. Yeah. But unfortunately, because of them, like, it was completely banned and you know, that it did not occur. So,
right.
But it is what it is, you know, and I think during that time, as we've like discussed before in the past, Pakistani rock really started popping up, because under that conservative regime, under that conservative lifestyle, where so much as to jeans are too Western for people right. to be putting on, when that's right. getting Australian, like, a lot of angst is naturally going to be like coming up, right? And so right. Pakistani rock really started, like, you know, blowing up in the 80s, for which then I feel like pop or Pakistani rock is to Pakistani pop is to what black music did to, or black culture did to, like, music, right?
Yeah, I think that's true. So I think let's look at this trend, right? We saw in the 70s and early part of the 80s, like, you know, this Pakistani pop that comes in and it's very, like, funky and weird and just, like, light and fun, but it's not very good music, honestly. Like, I go back and listen to it, I'm just like, this is, like, whatever. It's they're all classics. Like, Coco Carina obviously is, like, one of the most well-known songs, and some of them were pretty good, but I think overall it wasn't really cool. It was just a little bit weird. Then you saw this new revolution after the reign of Ziaul Huq, and Pakistani rock became a huge kind of, like, influence in all the different kinds of music in Pakistan. And it definitely made an influence on Pakistani pop. So Pakistani pop is still very different, right? You hear the Pakistani pop songs, it doesn't sound like the rock songs. And I think, you know, one thing is definitely the instrumentation, the bands versus solo artists kind of thing. But you still see that little bit of difference. And I think when we get into this period, that's where the trend of good Pakistani pop that's going to kind of live through the generations, more consistently, right? Like, you might have one-off songs from the 70s that were good, but I think the 90s and early 2000s brought a lot of really good songs. It brought the advent of some of our favorite artists today, you know, people that we grew up on, and they actually had really big hits. And that's I think you're right. I think, like, how black culture really influenced American music and changed it for the better, right? I mean, I think we can all agree that American music has evolved so much in the last 30 or 40 years. And, you know, hip hop, rap, and just, you know, R&B, black singers, black artists have had such a big part to play, to the point where a lot of white artists started mimicking them. And I think that's kind of, you know, that became popularized in Pakistan too. Like, these Pakistani rock artists, you know, Ali Azmat became, like, this huge international rock star. And people were like, yo, it's cool to be a singer. It's cool to have good vocals. It's cool to mishmash, like, these different audio trends, and you get really cool hits. And this is how I think you get the big, like, Abrarul Huq and Ali Zafar of the world in the 90s.
Yeah, definitely. There was the resurgence of Zohaib and Nazia Hassan occurred when Shoaib Mansoor, he decided that he wanted to create a show called Music 89 in 1989. So that's what we're referring to.
But it was very sort clever of like, with the names. Very clever with the name.
Straightforward, simple, to the point.
To the point.
But it was essentially Pakistan's MTV on right. PTV, right? And that's where Junoon, Strings, maybe it was not Strings, but it was like Junoon, Vital Signs, that's what I meant to say. Were some of the bands that really got notoriety from there, really gave them a platform. And people that were coming in from behind that really that were able to showcase their music with the likes of Sajjad Ali, like you said, Abrarul Huq. These are the guys that were able to come and be able to showcase their music, right? And that's because of that show. That's the reason why I think, like, they started becoming mainstream again. So, Sajjad Ali, man, that guy, I have a holy cow. There's so much to be said about him.
We're definitely going to touch on him in a little bit. But yeah, I think what you're saying is right. And, you know, a lot of this is the kind of, it's almost like a second revolution that Pakistan had as it kind of came out of its conservative, you know, dark period, we'll say, in the 80s. Under Ziaul Huq, and then all these artists just kind of crop up and pop up out of nowhere. Some artists that had already been famous, you know, kind of come out and make a comeback, like you said. And people like Sajjad Ali, I mean, Sajjad Ali's first album came out in 79. So he was there through the whole Ziaul Huq era. And then he got even more popular in the 90s. But again, his sound changed. If you go back and listen to early Sajjad Ali, it's very, you know, different from the Bebia Sajjad Ali that shows up in 93. You know, that was his third album at that point. And by the way, I'm going to double check this, but I'm pretty sure the album name for that was like Bebia 93 or something like that. And it's literally like the year that it comes out. Like, I'm not even kidding. There's no, yep, Bebia 93. And sure enough, it came out in 1993. I mean, the naming conventions are just unbelievable.
Awesome. Like Music 89. But I think Baby in 93, maybe he just had a new baby that year, man.
In 93.
Don't hate the player, man. This is the game one plays.
Listen, Pakistani naming conventions are very, very hilarious. Not just people naming their albums the year that they're just doing it in, but also the way that Pakistani children are named is always hilarious to me. You know, all their names have to start with the same first letter. Oftentimes, it's the same first three letters. It's a thing. It's a thing in Pakistan, for sure.
I don't know if I've come across too many rhyming. No, I have. I mean,
it's, not always rhyming. It's not always
rhyming either, but I know certain Afghan families, actually. This is random, but certain Afghan families do a lot of, like, rhyming names. I know a set of twins, Weiss and Kais. Like,
why? Just why? They're already similar enough. Yeah. You know, you need a differentiator. But like,
great guys, great guys. I love you guys. I feel like they listen, but no. But it was just, you know, that there's a lot of stuff like that. But I don't know if there's any. Do you know of any other like rhyming names?
They're not rhyming. They're just like weirdly similar. So like my cousin's names are Shahan. He's the oldest, and then his sister's name is Shahana. Like, they just added an A to it. So I think that's the kind of naming conventions that are very common in Pakistani culture. And clearly it translates over to naming albums. Sajjad Ali was like, what should I name this album? Oh, it's 1993. I'll just put 93 in the name for no reason.
Yeah. Makes sense. It's like he was like sitting there, it's like, what is hot and relevant today? What can I say to this? You would normally think of something that's, you know, mainstream, pop culture, lingo, but he's like, oh, I know what's going on today. The entire year of 1993. So that's his thought process, which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're going to jump back into that and talk a little bit more detail about Sajjad Ali for sure. But let's pause here, take a listen to this week's South Asian Spotlight. We'll be back afterwards. We'll talk a lot more about the pop life in Pakilan. And see you soon.
All right, all. This week, we're diving into some serious issues. I recently learned that after undergoing complex medical treatments, less than 10% of patients knew what their day-to-day care should look like post-treatment. And this is why the startup we're speaking with today, perfectly named Day to Day, was born. Joining us is founder Prem Sharma. Prem, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Maz.
Yeah, so from my understanding, after a patient's post-procedure follow-up, there's ongoing care and support that needs to be maintained, but most people don't know what that looks like, right?
That's right. And unfortunately, the high costs and information gap of what resources are available make it extremely difficult. Hmm. In fact, 80% of the information patients are told before they leave the hospital is immediately forgotten. What they remember, half is correct, half is incorrect. And it's not sufficient for patients to get their own care.
Right, right. And as sad as it is, it's understandable too, right? I mean, there's so much information thrown at you at once. So what's the solution?
So we created a day-to-day service to give patients a step-by-step guidance. We provide them all the information they need regarding their pre- and post-op care, as well as the entire rehabilitation journey to help them with a faster recovery.
Got you. Okay, and what are some of the specifics of the service?
So there are 9 core features of our services. This includes everything from wound care. We educate people about how they should be taking care of their wounds. They can send their photos. Our care team will monitor the wound and make sure they are healing properly. We simulate a doctor's brain by daily automating the check-ins to ensure patients are healing properly. if patients have any questions, they can live chat with our care team. We also look after the nutritional and psychological need of a patient. And also, we support the family members, because it's not only patients whose life has changed, the family members' life has also changed in these circumstances, and they also need support. So we help both patients and their families to navigate in probably the toughest times of their lives.
Gotcha. And that sounds like it has everything a patient needs to maintain their, well, day-to-day. So to learn more, go to www.daytoday.health. Thank you so much for joining us, Brahim.
Thank you, Maz.
All right, everyone, welcome back from the break. Before we left, we were talking about Sajjad Ali and his very terrible naming, abilities. But I think it's a perfect segue to talk about Sajjad Ali in general, because he has one of the defining features of a Pakistani pop artist from the 90s, which is he makes awful music videos. Yes. I mean, first of all, here's the thing. Pakistan has like five artists at any time that are doing anything. Okay. There's only like five people in the entire country that can do anything. And so, and then there's only like three channels on TV. There's like ARY, yeah. GEO, and PTV. That's it.
Yes.
And so it. Like when you turn on the TV and there's like, they would weirdly have like songs during commercials. They would have TV shows that would have songs or whatever. And you would just see the same videos over and over and over again. And, like, I could get by with that. I could see myself, like, watching a video and being like, okay, this is not bad. You're going to get tired of it eventually, right? But when the video itself is just trash, it's not a good situation. And Sajjad Ali, you know, he's got one of the most iconic videos of all time. The one that really, yes. you know, blew him up. And it was Bibia in 1993, which I'll always wow. know because of his album title.
Yes, Bibia 93. He had, my God, this was... a garage, right? Parking structure garage,
yeah.
White kicks, tight jeans, waist level jeans. Hairstyle of Sajjad Ali and Bibia, I'm still trying to figure out and see what the hell's going on. He had a mullet, but he did not have a mullet.
It's impressive. I mean, I don't know how he was able to do that, but I think you're right. Like, I think Pakistan in that time was just like, grow your hair out as much as possible, but yes. no one knew how to cut hair, clearly.
Yeah. But he didn't have sideburns. So he has a mullet. Like, it's like down to his
trapezius. Doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. And then he had longer hair on the side. No sideburns. Like, that was the, like, he's like, oh, baby. Like, he must tell us, like, baby, that was of 93, 94 or whatever. Excuse me, I'm going to go get my hair touched up today. I'm not even going to get a haircut. Goes yeah. to the barber. He's like, just do the sideburns. Snap, snap. That'll be $8, sir. And he's out. His hair looks like it's the like
sideburns, and we Gucci. We out.
Good. Spend like $12. Here you go, sir. Well, I'm out.
It's like a reverse bowl cut. It's so,
it looks like it's so floating ugly. And orbiting the scalp. Like, it's not touching the scalp. There's, I don't know what's holding
it's
almost,
it. Up. It's almost like a toupee, but it's not. Like, it's, yeah. it's actually his hair.
Legend has it, his hair was like this, and he was facing this way, and then he turned. And the hair didn't move, but he just was able to just turn his head. Legend had it. Someone saw that occur.
That's amazing. It's incredible. Amazing. It's incredible. So,
yes.
So what makes these videos so trash, you ask? Well, I'm glad you did. Because
yes.
it's the creepiness. It is truly the creepiness of these guys. Because, you know, this is like coming out of a conservative Pakistan into a more liberal Pakistan. But, like, these artists don't know what the hell is going on. They're just, like, trying to make a video about their stupid song about some girl that they saw. And you know, it's yeah. always like a girl like walking in a street or walking down an alley. It's like fixated. The camera's like fixated on her. But then there's this guy like hopping between cars, like yes. going Call of Duty stealth mode to kind of like stalk this girl. And I'm just like, how is this a video about anything other than you being a creep? Like, yes. why is this a thing that we have in our culture? But that was like every video. And, you know, Sajjad Ali kind of broke the mold with his
yes.
singing to a girl from a parking garage. Yes. I guess that's slightly better, but yes. it's still trash.
Yeah, it wasn't Michael Jackson's Bad that set this as the norm of like future location and set sites of music videos. No, this was Baby Ya. But Sajjad Ali took it upon himself to publicly let the world know this is how he hollers at women.
Right.
This is his tactic. The girl might even be 6 miles away. She's not always like walking right past them.
Right.
She could be very, very far, and like it's just a group of men that his band members or whoever just pop up out of like one of like the walls, the concrete walls.
They're just like, we are here to sing you a ballad.
Yeah.
Here you go.
Oh my God.
Yeah. This is why so many men in Pakistan have to get arranged marriages.
Yes.
Anyways.
This is one of the reasons why we have the other, why women have the other inbox on Facebook. This is part of it, man.
It's part of it.
Baby I wasn't the only jam or music video that was iconic of Sajjad's. Remember a song called Chief Saab?
Yeah, Chief Saab.
Oh, with the light flute at the beginning?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the crazy thing about Sajjad Ali is like his vocal range is so like wild because he's got a very iconic voice. Like, you know, yeah. It's Sajjad Ali on the track when he's singing. It's very nasally. It's very different. It sounds great. But, you know, he started with these weird poppy, like Baby is a very happy poppy song. Mm-hmm. Then he goes into like these really sad, iconic, melodious songs like Teriyad and Pani Ope Chalre. Like he has a very distinct voice. And it's crazy to me that he can go from anything from like Babya, which is some loser singing in a parking garage, to these like super heartfelt songs that are like basically love ballads for, you know, forever.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, that's part of like the, not appeal, but part of his genius in a way too. Like, sure. Like he obviously is making these entertaining like music videos on purpose. Like, sure. Like we can sit here, we can poke fun at it. We can be like, oh my God, what are you doing? But damn it. I say we own up to it. And here's, I have a little anecdote, but I remember it's important for us to own up to this stuff.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Hear me out. I was at South by Southwest one year in 2017. I did a music video for this band called Tesla Boy, and we were nominated for Best Music Video.
Sick video, yep.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. And it was screening, and as people are filing into the movie theater, you know what they were showing? This is like hella random, but what they were showing just to make the time pass by for people, to keep people like entertained before like the show began, it wasn't Pakistani music videos, sure. But they were showing random, like, South Asian, like, fight scenes from, like, Telugu movies, Tamil movies from, like, the 80s and stuff.
Oh,
and
man.
You have just a bunch of white people just, like, laughing, like, ha, 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 right? And I was like, this is not, like, if I'm sharing this, it's one thing, right?
It's hella racist, dude.
But I'm like, what the hell? So there's a part of me that I'm just like, no. This is our culture. I don't care, like,
how crappy
this
it is.
Ours. This is ours.
Only we can make fun of it.
And I don't care. I mean, dude, the songs are good. The songs are fun. They're poppy. Yeah. They're just like as poppy as the next like Taylor Swift song, right? Like, or the other pop songs from the West. So F it, dude. Like, own up to it. And Chief Saab, man. Chief Saab is he's like singing and dialoguing with the other people, like the other gang members in that song. He's like pushing them. Right? Like, he's amazing. Icon. Truly icon.
Yeah, he's an iconic guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think he gave rise to some other stars that came up. Probably the biggest one, or at least the one who had the biggest hit and impact, I think, on the 90s was Abrar Al Haq, right? Below the Ghar will forever be everyone's, you know, like favorite Pakistani pop song, I think. I think that album sold like 40 million copies, which, you know, for Pakistani artists is like, the moon and back. Eminem is like, I snore, put it on a tape, and it sells 40 million copies. But
yeah,
Abrar Al Haq is like the Pakistan's biggest, what's it called, success story with 40 million sales.
The Pakistani king of pop is truly Abrar Al Haq.
I think, you know, if you don't know who Abrar Al Haq is, you know, he is this really charismatic, super nice guy who he's done a lot of humanitarian work in the meantime and stuff like that, and he's very, you know, philanthropic, and he's into politics a little bit. But he basically also wrote the song called Below the Ghar, which for the longest time, by the way, I had no idea what he was saying in the song, okay? Because it just sounds like, and I'm just like, what is this guy saying? I just wrote it off to like some Punjabi that I don't understand, because I don't understand Punjabi that well.
Yeah,
you know, I'm great with Urdu, Punjabi hit or miss, but he's saying ticket katao, line banao. So cut your tickets, make a line. But when he says it fast, he's like ticka ticka tow, and I'm like, Lanabanao. And because of his accent, it's not line, it's Lanabanao. I'm like, oh my god, man. It took me 30 years of life to figure out what he was saying in this in this song. But yeah, iconic. It was just redone in Coke Studio. He came back in the last season and basically just did a rendition of it. And I think that was like my childhood screaming at the top of its lungs because that's how popular he was in the 90s.
Yeah. I have a confession to make. The first concert I had ever been to in my life was an Abraal Huck concert. Oof. And this was, I was introduced to Abraal Huck from my friend Abrar Uljut. And if this reminds you, if you got Abrar is a esteemed Punjabi rapper friend of mine who actually did an intro to one of our episodes, Genre Samjakaro, in that episode, season one, episode of that Genre Samjakaro. He did the intro for that. He did a rap for us. But he's the guy. He's the guy that introduced Abraal Huck to me, and he was a big fan. And I think his rapping chops even began with the little spurt of rap that Abraal Huck does in Below the Gur. Did Abraal Huck start rap?
Whoa. Did Abraal Huck start rap? What a claim, Mazali.
Yes.
What a claim. I don't know, man. I think that there's a case to be made here that, that Abraal Huck, a Pakistani 40 million copy record seller, started the worldwide phenomenon that is rap music. I think there's something, there's some verity to your claim, veritas.
I know of some of my friends have shared this with me that some of their parents have actually tried to proclaim that no, hip hop started in Pakistan with Abraal Huck. I just had to bring that ridiculousness to the forefront, honestly.
No, I think that, you know, and that's the crazy thing. That's something that we always try to talk about is like how certain music influences other music. And I think that that's, you know, he may not have started rap, but he might have influenced someone who did rap in Pakistan. And his genre, like the way that he like sang his songs and the kind of like fun and yet like dance, it's like dance, it's like good. You could dance to Below the Gur, right? You could absolutely do like a bhangra dance to that. And the fact that it was so goofy, but at the same time you could, you know, dance to it, made it very iconic and very popular. And I think that like Ali Zafar, when he came up in the 90s and he had that song, Chendo Ke Aakme Kinashahe, or Chendo, right? It was in the very same, like if the voices weren't so different, you might think Abraal Huck had recorded that song because it was a very Abraal Huck type of like beat and the way that he sang it and stuff like that. So everyone kind of influences everyone else. You know, there's a couple other singers that we didn't really mention so far. I think Fakir Mahmood is, he was a big hit, and he had a band called Awaz, and this other guy, Haroon, was in that. Haroon's also another singer. And then I think the last one was Shehzad Roy. Yeah, Shehzad Roy was the real badass of Pakistani pop music. This guy had the right haircut, the wrong suits. Like, I think at least like Sajjad Ali kind of like wore his clothes like with pride. Like, you know, it's the middle of the summer, in Pakistan. I'll wear a sweater, F you. Like, that's pretty cool. Shehzad Roy always persistently wore the worst fitting suits I've ever seen on a human being. Yes. I mean, we're talking like Sunil Shetty from Sheher Ki Ladki Bad. It is awful. It's always the wrong size. And by like four sizes, not even like one size.
Which is funny because like modern day Ranveer Singh wears, I mean, not all the time, but I've seen him do a couple of looks where he's wearing like an incredibly oversized suit because he can. And he's like, Ranveer
Singh. High fashion, baby.
High fashion, dude. I mean, these are trailblazers.
Did you ever watch Tosh.0? There was like a whole season where he just said high fashion and he like would share like absurd stories or absurd pictures from like catwalks and just be like, high fashion. I feel like that's what Pakistani music videos are sometimes. It's just like, you're right. Some of that fashion is coming back. Ranveer Singh is regularly wearing these oversized suits. Yeah. Virgil's last collection was all about oversized everything. But
like the Jordan suits, yeah. It's weird, like a mixture of like those Zoot suits, yeah.
Yeah, but when Shahzad Roy did it in the 90s, it was just plain ugly.
Unprecedented, yes. Who are these? Also, randomly, to take a couple of like notes back, who are these archetypes? Who is Billo?
Who is Chen No? Yeah. Who is Billo? What are these names? I'm telling you, man, the names. Box any names. These yes. get me. They're always mm-hmm. something funny. Like, who is Billo de Ghar? Like, whose house is that?
Yeah, what's going on in Billo's Ghar? Like,
I don't know.
Should we ask these questions? Like, what's happening?
I'm not sure I want to know the answers. But so, you know, all things considered, Pakistani pop, I think that, you know, it's missing one thing, and it's pretty blatant. It's missing female artists. I think that we're starting to see a little bit of a change in that, but not really. I mean, I can't really name too many Pakistani female artists that are pop singers. It's been dominated by men. And it's, again, we've named like seven people, and that's been pretty much the whole like spectrum of Pakistani pop music this whole time. So we've got a little bit of ways to go, but I think pop music has evolved a lot in the last few years in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. I think people like Ali Zafar kind of carry the torch for us into the future. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we'll see some new artists, you know, kind of make their way into the mainstream as TV shows like Coke Studio really give them a platform.
There was in the 80s, there was the Benjamin Sisters. Do you recall them, or do you remember your parents ever talking about them?
I don't think so. That might be a name that I've never heard.
Yeah, no, I was trying to do like a little more research, and I was like checking it out, and the Benjamin Sisters were they're a little group. There were three sisters that I think just that were a pop act in the 80s, but unfortunately, like because of the regime, they didn't, you know, last long. Which I didn't even know about, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And to show that, yeah, they were trying to put like, you know, all these women in the forefront, and still have a long ways to go. There's a random woman in the Bay Area. We had a white woman in the Bay. Her name was Janice Miller. I don't know if there's any other Bay Area based people listening to this. I think you remember who Janice Miller is, because we had a white woman in the Bay who was notorious for singing like Pakistani songs, Pakistani rock songs, Pakistani pop songs. And she was like a hit. I do not understand how or why this or where this woman came from, but she literally would just show up at weddings. She's like, come on, San Francisco, chala aja Sony. Yeah. And just all the uncles in our community were obsessed. They're like, oh, Janice Miller, like, I guess it's like to them, like those white women freaking singing like Desi songs was like, oh my God, this is everything. But it was in my heart, she was the one person that is the only female Pakistani pop artist that comes to mind.
Yeah, but, and that's the thing. Like, we don't even, you know, we have like these kind of Pakistani kind of artists, but there's not a lot. So, you know, that's probably the only change I'd like to see. Until then, I guess we'll just keep watching weird guys jumping behind cars in their search of, I don't know, attracting a female. But, you know, that's all we got. But Mazli, you got anything to add about Pakistani pop before we sign off?
I don't, man. I don't. They're just fun music videos. They're fun songs, you know, just like with pop in every other country. You know, Pakistan did it right as well, man. And so, Abra Haq, I mean, you listen to all these songs again. Ajat Beja Cycle, Kuria Lahordia, all these songs, like, they're just fun, man.
And, they're just fun.
Just want to give shouts and props to them.
Some of them are even good. It's shocking, but it's true. All right, cool. Well, this has been our take on Pakistani pop music. We've got a lot of other episodes this season that talk about the other music scenes in Pakistan and how they all relate to each other. And you'll start to, I think at this point, people will start to notice that there is definitely a trend. It's a lot of the same names. Pakistan has a ways to go in terms of artists and whatnot, but it's great that we've made it this far. So.
Yeah.
It's Maz Khan signing off. Like, subscribe, comment, let us know if there's someone that we've missed that you'd love for us to check out. I'm all about checking out new Pakistani artists or old Pakistani artists that I just didn't know about. So let us know. And until next time, this is the Maz is signing off.
Maz Ali signing off. Janice Miller is a Wikipedia, just FYI. Look her up. I'm out.